Major sausage that is. Look at the state of it.
I was just figuring we could talk a bit of shit about motorsport and other sports if they come up, but...
Sure.
Yeah. Just a good time of the year to get involved. We do these long, wound-out cold opens these days. We don't even introduce the fucking podcast anymore, but I might actually do it this time. Just so people know there's a different voice. So, because Bezo's down in Coffs Harbour as part of one of the Queensland rep teams.
Oh, there's a shit part of the world.
Well, yeah.
I spent a lot of time in Coffs Harbour in a past life, and it is just
why Coffs Harbour?
Oh, too many repressed memories to go into details, but the point is, I spent a lot of time there, and it's bad. It's a place that only exists because you need to stop somewhere when you're driving between Sydney and Brisbane.
Also because old people need somewhere to retire to.
People actually live there?
Yeah. Most of them are fairly old. I mean, it's Lismore on sea.
I thought it was basically it's basically just you drive in and there's a McDonald's and you stop and you get your hotcakes and then you go on your way.
No, there's a whole bloody coastal kind of retiree super yamba in there.
Super yamba.
Well, think about yamba. That's
an advertising slogan that's never going to take off. Yes,
it's like yamba but bigger. The thing about yamba is that it's kind of got a cross between Noosa and Blacktown because it's got the sort of it's got the coastal bit, which is all kind of a little surf shops and you know artisan cafes and stuff. And then it's just got this sort of western suburbs, which is sort of a strip mall and a Macca's and a whole bunch of people with not a lot of teeth.
Blacktown, see.
And it's always had that kind of weird dynamic. But Coffs Harbour is this kind of both of those smashed together and stuck on the coast. But
Coffs Harbour is so irrelevant and just so pointless. I'm utterly unsurprised the WRC ended up going there.
Going back there, because there was always a round of the Australian Championship going back to the fucking 80s, I think, out in those forests. And then it's gone all around the world and ended up back there after all. But I actually had a look at because there's a round of the New Zealand Championship close by here in Otago. Actually, that they have a stage downtown and all the rest of it. It's really quite nice. And of course, it's you go out and watch them go around. It's dirt. It's completely free. Hayden usually comes down and does a few demo events. But I had a look at the WRC event in Australia just for reference. And they're charging you money to go out into the forest and stand on the side of the road and have rocks thrown at you. Like, they're charging you money.
I can do that for free down at the train station.
Just to walk down into the fucking forest. They're charging admission, which I think is amazing. Anyway, Bezos in Coffs Harbour as people who have been listening to the last couple of eps, as a member of the coaching staff, not entirely thrilled with the more senior members of his coaching staff of one of the Queensland rep sides for the National Touch League. And I think if I read it right, they didn't go so good. So make sure you remember that. If you see him on Twitter, remind him that he's done a bad job. But instead this week on the Bulls podcast, there's your cold open, folks. I, the Doc, am joined by returning guest Bernie T. Bolt, live from upstairs in a lounge room somewhere in the larger part of Sydney, I assume.
I'm in what's technically called the study.
You're in the study.
The lounge room's downstairs. That's where my partner, Erin, is hiding with our child. While I sit up here, sneak beers, and talk shit on the internet.
Now, we should mention that your other half does get mentioned on the podcast a bit because of her very well-regarded writings on the AFL and things of that nature. I do have a mea culpa for last week, which I don't believe anybody has actually listened to, but I gave the AFL a hat tip for telling all the teams that didn't put in sides for the AFL women to go fuck themselves. It turns out that I didn't quite understand that not all the teams that didn't have teams in the AFL women's did so via choice, like the Swans did. Some of them did. Some of them weren't able to put a team in because there was actually a cutoff point, which I wasn't aware of. And I believe your team was one of those teams.
The glorious Richmond Tigers, they put in for a women's team, but didn't get up. And I think next year they're expanding the comp.
Well, no, what we were talking about last week was that the AFL had said, no, we're not changing anything for next year. We're not bringing in any new teams. We're still keeping the tickets free, and there'll be no new teams until 2019. And I said, that's a tremendous fuck you to all the teams that couldn't be asked putting in a bid for last time. But that was mainly aimed at the Swans, though, because I thought surely the one of the richer teams in the comp, who's got probably the richest supporter base in terms of socioeconomic geography in the entire comp, couldn't find the resources to put in a team, which I thought was a bit shithouse.
Yeah, no, that was a bit shithouse. I mean, good on the Giants for coming up with a successful bid.
Yeah.
And good on Richmond for trying. Like,
yeah,
that's the life of a Richmond supporter. You tried.
Yeah, your participation medal, basically. Everything since the 70s has been a participation medal.
Richmond always got the encouragement award at the Year 6 Sports Carnival.
Yeah, believe me, I know that stuff. South Sydney supporter. So we finally got a trinket for turning up after many, many years. But we don't talk a lot of AFL on this podcast because basically we don't know enough about it to make any sense of it. We also don't talk a lot of motorsport because normally Bizzo doesn't know anything about it, so he's not useless to talk about it. I mean, sometimes he says, do the V8 supercars all V8s? Which they are for the moment, but next year they won't be.
Allegedly.
Well, so the Virgin Australia supercars, as we're obliged to call them now, had their season opener in Adelaide a couple of weeks ago, where Shane Van Gisbergen just beat the living piss out of everyone. But next year they're supposed to be moving to a lot of change coming along, this being the last year of the convention.
Well, no, it's this year. This year is the first year of the new regs.
I thought they'd held over the rules for in terms of the next generation engine formula until next year.
No. This is the first year of all the new regs where you can have your coupes, you can have your turbo fours and sixes.
Just that nobody's
done it.
No. I understand.
DJR's come closest with a couple of people kicking around that they might do it. Or not DJR.
No, it was DJR.
Maybe it was DJR.
Ryan
kicking
Story,
around.
The ridiculous vampire, you know, ridiculous pasty man who lives in the shadows.
Kicking around that they might, that they might do a Mustang at some point.
Yeah,
but
the key line
is not going to happen.
Well, they won't do it unless Ford Australia kick the can down the road for them.
And they're not going to, so exactly. It's not going to happen.
So they'll either be hanging around in aging Falcon taxis, or they'll be building something else. But General Motors are apparently, because this is part of the whole deal where all of Holden's Motorsports organization is going to happen through AAA. So AAA are going to build the cars, and the engines are going to basically be crate motors from GM Performance in the States. They're probably going to be variants of the Cadillac twin-turbo V6 they run in GT3. So that's pretty much what they're going to do. Now, I don't know what will stop a team from just saying, fuck off, we'll keep running our old Chevy V8-powered Commodores until the wheels fall off them, but
probably nothing unless they write them out of the regs, which I can't see them doing,
no,
but it's possible.
Because you don't want it, but no.
Or the economics, which
there keeps being, like, renders of, like, imaginary Kia supercars and things popping up in the
I would watch Kia Stinger supercar. Like, that thing would be awesome.
You'd really watch a Kia racing.
Have you seen the Stinger?
Yeah, I saw the render.
Car.
I saw the render of it. And I've seen the whatever the Hyundai version of it is. The funny thing is I happened to be in Korea last year for a job, and it turns out that Hyundai keep all their best-looking cars for the home market because, you know, every second car is a Hyundai, and they look, for some reason, they've got much better stuff that they're not sharing with the rest of the world. So there's that. Although they're pretty much just mostly selling Santa Fe's to us.
Santa Fe's, Tucson's, i30s. A lot of those. Heaps of those.
Of course, Hyundai and New Zealand have a bit of a buzz, a bit of a bump because of their boy Hayden Padden being. Put it this way: how many free-to-air channels is rallying on in Australia?
Oh, that would require me paying attention to it, and I don't, so I don't know.
I suspect it's less than three.
I suspect it's less than one.
Yeah, I think it is too. But we did the maths a while ago. So, okay. So, in New Zealand, if you want to watch the World Rally Championship, because Hayden Padden's in it as a Kiwi, you can watch it. You can watch stages live on one of the free-to-air channels. You can watch highlights a week later on another one of the free-to-air channels. And you can watch daily highlights on the pay TV sports channel, as well as being able to watch all of those things on Red Bull TV. So you're not short of ways to seeing it.
Is watching a live rally stage on TV basically the motorsport equivalent of golf? Because I can't think of anything more tedious.
Well, it was good because they used to do it when I've got a recollection of them doing it in the Rally Australia days. We're like, yeah,
oh, Colin McRae. when it was in Perth, and they had the Super Duper stage around the showground or whatever
They had that, but they also had the final stage was in the Bunnings Forestry Plantation, literally back when Bunnings was a forestry company and not owner of every hardware store.
Believe we covered this in my last appearance.
We might have.
It all comes back to Bunnings.
It all comes back to Wesfarmers. But they had that infamous section on that last stage where it comes skating down the hill into a big water splash and out the other side. And I've clearly got a clear recollection of Colin McRae spending most of the time coming down the hill airborne and sideways at the same time. I've got no idea how he managed to kill himself in a helicopter. He seems like a very careful fella.
Hmm.
Anyway.
I don't know where to go from there.
No, we'll go back to VR Supercars. So did you catch any of the or all of the Adelaide 500, as it's going to be called again from next year?
I did. I saw both races, but I only saw the qualifying on Sunday.
Yeah.
So that qualifying session on Sunday was stupendous. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I've got this distinct impression that winning all these things has made Shane Van Gisbergen really good at winning all the things, and that might mean that he goes on to win a lot more of all the things. I mean, last year, as we mentioned in last time we were on the pod, he pretty much won every championship he entered.
Aside from that Asian GT, whatever it was thing.
Yes, and aside from the made-up Stefan Rattel invented trinket that he bought at a beachside stall in Bali sort of thing. I think I think you mentioned it on the internet Twitter type device that he seemed a lot more assured in his media stuff.
Oh, no, that was Aaron again. It appears that he's been out in the off season at learning how to talk.
Well, he's certainly a lot more assured, and he does jokes, and he seems to have a lot more confidence in front of the... I mean, I've always thought Van Giz... My mum was a primary school teacher, and there's something about kids who've got a little bit of the Asperger's to them. They've got a certain look in the eye.
Oh, he has that.
And he has that
in spades.
He has that kind of slightly frenetic, far away, tiny pupilled look of a kid who would be a fucking handful as an 8-year-old in a primary school class. But he seems to have a lot more calmness about him.
Notwithstanding that's changed.
Chucking it in the fence at Bathurst, which was
the antithesis of that, yes.
I've seen Shane make a lot of mistakes this weekend. I don't want to say too much. Why do I sound like Toto Wolff?
Oh, that was funny. That had me in stitches.
That was an amazing thing. Well, the whole thing was... So this, folks, we talked about this a few weeks ago on the pod when it happened, was Shane Van Giz binning the quasi-factory Merc in the last 15 minutes of the Bathurst 12-hour. As he said himself in the post-race, don't know if you caught this because it was on Fox, but he was on the panel with Jess Yates and Scaife and Ingle, and he was talking about all the racing that he'd done in the off-season. He said, well, I've been over and done the Daytona 24 hours, and then I did the Bathurst 12 hours, or the Bathurst 11 and three-quarter hours, as it was for me, and everyone burst out laughing, and he's now got jokes. He's either had so much media training, or he's got so much more confidence in himself. He's now got comic timing, which is incredibly rare. But
I really do think it's training, because his TV, even last year, him on TV, it was leagues above what I'd been told he's like to interview, and what I've heard him being interviewed on things that aren't TV, and like this was. I was out with a guy for my job, and he had to interview Shane Van Gisbergen for another one of his jobs. And I was just listening to, he was doing on speakerphone. I was just sitting there listening to it, and holy, it was like blood from a stone.
Well, yeah.
Sort of sort of stuff. And then you watch him on TV and, you know, he could at least string a sentence together. But this, coming out when he came out at Adelaide, it was, you know, leaps and bounds again on
also
top of
when
it.
Also, when he had to fess up to stuffing it in the fence in Bathurst, that would have been real tough. And he actually stood up and copped that on the chin and diffused whatever stuff. He wasn't really aware what Morrow had said about him at that stage. Morrow Engel, his alleged teammate, had said about him the fact that it was all his fault and that he'd been making mistakes all weekend. He diffused that rather well as well. I mean, I just don't see when he's had time to have media training.
The other thing is, this is a good point too.
The other interesting thing about that is that Holden Motorsports media side has had a bit of a upheaval in that their motorsport manager quit, and it seems like a lot of that stuff has fallen onto the Red Bull machine rather than being done by Holden Motorsport themselves.
Which is probably a really smart thing because Triple Eight are very Red Bull in their approach to media, and they're all slick and it's all funny and it's all, you know, very well produced, and they do cool stuff like making V8 drift cars and, you know, just nonsense things.
Yeah, exactly right. And they can fall upon the massive Red Bull marketing machine, because Red Bull is a marketing machine first and foremost. It's almost like they're a marketing company and a promotional entity that as a side business, sells hospital disinfectant disguised as an energy drink.
Yeah, no, I can't remember the last time I even saw a can of Red Bull in a shop.
Oh, it was probably in the...
I don't go to shops that often, by the way, so your mileage may vary.
You're not allowed to. No, no, it's normally the biohazardous section, isn't it? Is it not?
Bath involved. Not good.
I mean, it's only one race in, but it's going to be hard to see... It seems that Van Giz has got the measure of Jamie, and I don't know... Two Girls Win Cup. Obviously, things will change with different tracks and different packages. I mean, obviously, the Walkinshaw racing cars are always good on point and squirt street circuits. Dick Johnson's team seem to be engineeringly re-energized by Ludo Lacroix chucking his toys and leaving Red Bull.
I was genuinely surprised by how quick DJR were on the weekend. Like, that was... Jandals did good, Crazy Fabe did good, and I was surprised to see them that far up towards the pointy end.
Well, the funny thing is that that Van Giz was actually quoted in the media and on Fox, and he got a bit of heat for this because it was taken as a bit of snark, but he said, I was following one of their cars in practice, and it looked exactly like one of ours, so obviously Ludo's tuned them up really well. And that was taken as a bit of snark, but in reality, what he's saying is that what they've done is that
they've actually tuned a really good car. They've built something that's going to be competitive.
The reason you hire a dude like Ludo, chief engineer at Triple Eight for the last 17 years. And side note, isn't it interesting how there's a little bit of a record of Roland's long term engineering guys chucking their toys and stomping out? Well, I don't know if you could call Adrian Burgess long-term, but he did bring him across. He did bring him across from Europe to work for Triple Eight, and then he defected to HRT, Walkinshaw Racing. And Ludo has been with Brolin for 17 years and has since been headhunted to DJR Team Penske. There seems to be quite a lot of background bitterness and snark, and, you know, Ludo probably didn't enjoy the fact that he'd been pensioned off to work on Lowndes' car instead of the main two-car Triple Eight team. And the other interesting thing about that was interesting was that Russell Ingall went full, I can't understand the foreigner on the coverage. He said that there's how the hell that basically saying that alluding to the fact that Ludo hadn't had a frontline radio voice team engineer job at Triple Eight because he was so hard to understand on the radio.
Yeah, Russell Ingall said it, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
True.
Russell Ingall can be bloody hard to understand at times too, by the way. Russell.
Rusty ring pulls. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to be there, but I'm just not sure how, you know, Shane can beat Shane, but I'm not sure how many times other people are going to beat Shane this year.
No, I would be really surprised if it wasn't Shane and Two Girls, you know, fighting it out again at the end of the season.
Yeah.
For the silverware. So
the next round of the V8 Supercars, so the next pseudo round of the V8 Supercars is the Virgin Australia Supercars, get my branding right, is the Australian Grand Prix round, which next year might actually be a round of the championship because they're...
there's another one of those things I would be deeply, deeply surprised about.
Well, I think that... I think that V8 Supercar, well, sorry, Virgin Australia Supercar, what do we call them? VASC. I think VASC would like it to be a little bit less fucking pointless with them rocking up for their couple of ridiculous little races.
Yeah, but the problem they have is that they'd want it to be their show, and it's not. And it never will be, as long as it's a Formula One Grand Prix. Formula One owns the event, and Formula One gives them bugger all track time because they're a support category to Formula One.
Yeah, though the story I read was that the new promoter was very keen to look at things like that and start. I mean, obviously they're not going to get track time on a Sunday, but to give them a long race in the twilight on the
Saturday
Friday
afternoon.
Saturday does not take, you know, it's no skin off of Formula One's nose, and it makes the story better. I mean, for years...
Well, the problem with that is, too, now that they've moved the Formula One back into the afternoon already, right? So you've got qualifiers at, what, like 4 o'clock local time or something like that, so you're not going to start your race till 6. It's going to get dark. Daylight saving's finished.
Yeah, no, you do it on Friday.
You're talking about having to light the circuit, and that's never going to happen there.
Well, I'd like to see the
supercars don't have headlights, even though they should.
Well, they've got crappy little low beams.
Yeah. I mean, you can be able to fit them out with proper racing headlights, but that's not going to happen.
I reckon they should put...
have to light the circuit, that's not going to happen.
I reckon turn on the street lights and give them all those World Rally style light pods. That's and Spotties. No, it's Australia. Australia, have Spotties on the robot. Have just really shit Spotties, mate.
Speaking of Spotties, was there or was there not at the GPI 24 Hours a couple of years ago, basically a NASCAR where they did that? They just strapped some spotlights onto the top of the car and went and did a 24-hour race in it because, sure, why not?
That sounds about right. There was definitely a Sebring 12-hour many, many years ago where a car got crash damaged, and they were going to disqualify it because it no longer had taillights. So they grabbed a fucking dolphin torch and some red cellophane and basically stuck the red cellophane over the dolphin torch and gaffer taped it to the back of the car so there was a red taillight.
That is
definitely happened. I think it was a factory Porsche, and I think it was almost going to win the race, but it blew up in the last hour or something. It might have been Derek Bell or Hans-Joachim Stuck or somebody like that.
That is the sort of race engineering I can get behind.
That is the kind of last job, boxer hammers kind of action that we approve of. Speaking of sports cars, so it'll be next weekend. It's the Sebring 12 Hour, which is the second round of the IMSAs, which is the Americans have their big sports car races before the European season. So that's as good a segue as any to talk about World sports cars, world endurance, which is every chance of sucking this year if Toyota can't battle toe to toe with Porsche.
Yeah, I've got a really bad feeling that this is going to be 2013 all over again.
Where it would
except instead of it being Audi and Toyota, it's going to be Porsche and Toyota.
Yeah, so that was the year that was going to be the first year of the World Endurance Championship, except Peugeot pulled out. Literally
right at the
5 minutes before the start of the season, having agitated for the existence of the World Endurance Championship. And so Toyota rushed their act together just so that they could be so that somebody could compete with Audi, but it was really an exhibition of a man kicking a dog. Toyota weren't particularly quick until following years.
Did they win a race at the end of the year? I think they might have won a race at the end of that season.
They might have done.
They might have been at Brazil or something, you know, like the token. Hey, Brazil. We won something.
Brazil. Oh, no, that's certainly what Porsche did when they came in. They won the token race at the end of the year. Helped a little bit by Mark Webber spreading one of their other team car across the wall on the exit of the last corner in Brazil.
Very reminiscent of an accident he had in a Jaguar Formula One car.
Yes, he was quite good at that. I think he's certainly enjoying his retirement, faffing about, doing whatever he wants. And Australia can enjoy giving much less of a fuck about world sports cars now that his place was taken by another Kiwi.
Yes, it was too, Earl Bamber.
Earl Bamber, the...
Who's a handy pair of hands.
He is.
That's a really... I should have chosen better words.
Well, he's probably a footy pair of feet as well.
He probably is a footy pair of feet.
Yeah. So, I mean, he and uh, he's got basically replaced Webber directly in the what will be the number two Porsche, and the number one will have Lotterer and
Nick Tandy and Neil Yani.
Is joining Neil Yani. I suspect that'll be the car that gets the world title, just because Lotterer, as much as anything.
Yeah, I'd like to see Hartley get up. Like, he has impressed me ever since he came in to the championship.
Hartley's good,
he's good.
He is definitely the quickest in that car. The problem is that he can drop his shit, as you saw in the first round last year. And Tanda is also even more susceptible to dropping his shit. And the other problem with Bamber, he's also, sometimes his attitude's a little bit suspect. I recall a comment from your man, the weird Geordie, Hindoff. Talking about, God, he's the worst thing about World Sports Cars. Talking about one of the GT3 drivers who said, it was in the Bathurst 12 hour, saying that if any of these GT4 guys got in the way, they'd just nerf them off, and then alluding to the fact that it had cost him his race. And it was a pretty unveiled shot at Bamber. But it is the sort of thing that Bamber would do. He's got a pretty pig-headed attitude. I mean, that basically cost him the World GT Championship in Macau. He got past Laurens Vanthoor on pace with a fantastic move, but it was invalidated because he was going to get a 5-second penalty for doing something fucking dumb about a lap or two before. So he might be a little bit too inconsistent, unfortunately.
It'd be hard to unseat Tandy Lotterer and Yani. Unless, you never know, maybe Toyota will pull a rabbit out.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm actually probably going to enjoy watching the IMSA a bit more, because those new Daytona prototypes are actually kind of cool. I think that's probably the future of the series when Porsche eventually have to pull out because of Volkswagen and Toyota have got no one else to fight against. I think it's going to be...
Well, rumour is that Peugeot's coming back.
Yeah, they've said that. They said they won't come back until it's much, much, much cheaper.
Much cheaper. And it's not going to get much, much, much cheaper.
Nah, so I think the future would have to be like a sort of a hybrid version of the existing P2 Privateer and the way IMSA have developed their DPI formula, which is you'd form an alliance with an existing P2 manufacturer and you build a car based on that, and it's a much cheaper way. I mean, from a marketing perspective, if you're in motorsport to get your name out and for marketing, the DPI formula makes perfect sense because it's a relatively cheap way of doing top-line motorsport. If you're doing it for technological development, then obviously the LMP1 rules as they stand are tremendous, but someone's always going to lose if you do
that. The problem is DPI only works in North America.
At the moment.
No one really outside it cares.
Well, no. If you brought that model to Europe, though.
Oh yeah. If you brought the model to Europe,
that's kind of what I'm figuring.
Which means they have to sort out what they're doing with the DPIs and the LMP2s and sort of the homologation and all that sort of garbage.
Well, I reckon what they'll probably do with that is, because there was an argument about whether the DPIs, which are like the LMP2, which is the second level. I'm just for the benefit of the listener, they're kind of second level prototypes that have been done up a bit by the factories, with a bit of factory support. And whether they were allowed to run at Le Mans, where the rules were not going to cover it. And for many years in the 90s and noughties, there was a separate class for the American sports prototypes. There was a GTP class at Le Mans. I mean, why couldn't you just let the DPIs run as their own class, which is kind of in between the P1s and the P2s? It seems like a very fucking obvious thing to do, but obviously that's a bit too hard.
I think the problem would be space.
Yes,
actually fitting the cars.
The aliens will come down
in the grid somewhere. Because it's like, even now with the expanded, I think it's 60,
yeah,
50 cars or something like that.
And they
by the time you get the blow-in P1 privateers who turn up for no real reason, there's a category that I don't understand why it exists.
Well, there's only one of them this year. But that's the kind of thing.
One of them this year, the Bicolis car, which I only know because I'm looking at the entry list.
But that's going to be the future because, yeah, I mean, it's kind of...
The hybrid stuff's cool, but it's too expensive. No one's going to drop the €100 million or whatever you need now to put this. Like, this is formula. The problem with P1 is now it's Formula One money for the manufacturers.
Yep. And it's not Formula One profile. So we're going to look back on those, the last couple of years of WEC, a little bit like how old heads look back on Can-Am in the 70s, in the late 60s and early 70s, is this amazing formula with unrestricted rules that just was always going to die because someone was always going to be too fast and it would kill the sport flat out. And that's what happened in the 70s with Can-Am. And that's probably what's going to happen to this. And then it'll have to morph into something else.
It'll come down to some sort of engine, hybrid engine package thing. You don't have to build your own car. You just, if you want to develop an engine and plug a battery into it, you can do that. But here's your car. You know, buy your chassis from someone, buy your engine from someone else, and go racing.
You can develop your own hybrid if you want, but here's an off-the-shelf one you can use if you need to, sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Formula One is happening. Well,
is it?
Well, apparently. And I read that that Ferrari might be quick, or maybe Mercedes might be foxing, and Red Bull have got a quick car, but the engine might not be up to it. McLaren seemed beset by engine problems. Wait, hang on. Oh, fuck, I'm reading the 2015 preseason notes. Turns out that it's exactly the fucking same.
It appears to be. My thing always with this is it's testing. Who knows?
Exactly.
We'll find out exactly how quick the cars are in Q2 at Albert Park.
Yes. And even then, we won't really know until they're actually doing long runs.
Well, even then, we won't know until they go back to and start the European end of the season.
Well, the thing is that, in theory, this year, the tyres won't be this magical degrading bullshit that Bernie Eccleston liked. They're supposed to be able to run on them flat out, but who knows, because these are a totally different spec of tyre, different construction, considerably wider. We just don't know whether that'll be the case. But in theory, they should be able to run flat out all day, every day on these things.
Yeah, I've heard some interesting things about the new aero configurations that they've got for this year. Apparently, Formula One hates the shark fin, which, surprise.
It's fucking hideous. I mean, this is the ultimate...
Well, we went through the same thing with this when they introduced them into the whatever it was called before the WEC.
Yeah, sports cars.
When all the prototypes came out with these shark fins on them, everyone went, oh, they're terrible, you know, they're destroying the look of the cars, da 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 da. 4 years later, who cares?
Well, I think they look fuck awful because the shark fin is actually higher than the rear wing. But the biggest problem...
They look fuck awful because modern Formula One cars look fuck awful.
There's that too. There is that too. But the problem is it was all promised to be fantastic and then it turned out to just be a handful of shit. Welcome to Formula One. There was a whole lot of unintended consequences from very obvious rule changes that turned out to completely fuck up the implementation of the rule. Welcome to Formula One. The only promising thing about this is that now they have a mechanism for these sorts of things to be unfucked, because they have a dude called Ross who looks at things and says, nah, I don't think we want that. Let's get rid of that. Yeah.
I was watching an interview with him on the Formula One website, and he's just like, I wouldn't have done that.
No. He said, I'm going to undo that.
Really? Well, the problem is, too, now that these rules are fixed for 3 years or something like that.
Oh, the thing is that the means of changing the rules now exist, though. You don't need... I think they're unpicking the problem. The biggest problem was that if you could bring in new rules and they were crap, you couldn't change them because there was a whole lot of different power blocks and none of them would ever agree. So the thing would just stagnate and you'd end up with the same crap over and over again, unless Bernie came in and pulled some stunt and got what he wanted. So it's possible that, you know, it makes me feel a little, as somebody who's watched a lot of bad Formula One over the years, it does give me a little bit of confidence that we might be heading somewhere more positive. The interesting thing is that the quickest car out there doesn't have a shark fin. So, I mean, the thing about the shark fin is that the point behind the shark fin, folks, if you look at these cars and go, what the fuck is that for? It's meant to kind of straighten out the airflow and direct it onto the rear wing. Because otherwise, if you're turning through a corner, the air kind of tumbles over the back and you get kind of sort of air that's in yaw. It's kind of going diagonally across the rear wing. And the rear wing doesn't work as well to generate downforce in that context. But if you've got the shark fin, it straightens it up. The other really useful thing for the shark fin in a sports car context is, and this is why it was always sold to me when I was, when I've heard it talked about by commentators, is as the car gets sideways, there's no risk of it creating a kind of an aero lift effect as the car goes sideways. Because otherwise, if you get a sports car sideways at high speed, it's going to create an aero lift.
Well, it's the same reason you get the flaps on the roof of a NASCAR.
Yes, exactly right.
Just to try and stop them rolling over. I mean, on a NASCAR, they don't work because someone else barrels into the side of you at 200 mile an hour and you're rolling over anyway.
And you get stuck, head first into a fence. So that works from that perspective, but when was the last pretty Formula One car?
Ooh, Rothman Williams.
See, I grew up before raised noses, so I've never been a fan of the raised noses, so I probably would have gone back to something like maybe the very first one that killed Ayrton Senna. That might have been it, but... But the, you know, the,
good car to like.
Yeah, good car to respect. Otherwise, it might fuck with your shit. So that's that. That's the Formula One. Anything? Do you think your boy Ricardo's got any shot of winning anything other than the dude most pissed off with Max Verstappen by the end of the year?
Oh, well, he'll win that one by a country mile. No contest there. Honestly, it probably all boils down to Lewis Hamilton's temperament.
Yeah.
Has he turned up to actually race this year, or is he going to go off in a huff the moment something doesn't go his way? If that happens, Ricardo probably is in a position to pick up a couple of wins, provided Max Verstappen doesn't decides not to involve himself.
Well, the thing about Hamilton is that so much of his championship years have been about him recreating this whole Prost Senna vibe in his own head with Rosberg. And now that that's over, it's going to be interesting to see how it affects his own psychology. He's always been the sort of guy who's needed to create shit in order to get the best out of himself. I mean, when he was really, in that first year at McLaren, he was at his quickest when he and Alonso were at each other's throats and playing ridiculous games and blocking each other in qualifying and all kinds of bullshit like that. And again, with Rosberg, it was the same sort of thing. With Rosberg gone, I wonder if it'll be interesting to see whether he loses a little bit of that psychological intensity, because how do you have that kind of psychological intensity against a bloke called Valtteri Bottas, who appears to be the psychological equivalent of a blank piece of paper? He's just a...
I will say, for recent Finnish Formula One drivers, he's probably got the most personality.
Oh, God.
I realise that's a really low bar.
Well, bar... Finnish drivers, that'd be Kimi, wouldn't it? He'd be in the bar drinking all the vodka.
Oh, Mika Häkkinen.
Yeah,
I was not renowned for being overly talkative.
The thing about Mika, though, was that apparently he was secretly a mad bastard, but he just didn't.
Oh, yes. He just had no time for it, it on for the cameras.
Whereas Kimi just doesn't have it at all. He just gives no fucks at all. So,
was Heikki Kovalainen Bogen? He was Finnish, wasn't he?
He was, but he was also slow, so that was a problem. Well, he wasn't slow.
Not very good.
That was all right. He's the current Super GT champion. He won the Super GT for Toyota, so I wondered whether he might be an outsider because Toyota are going to run a third car, at Le Mans. I wondered whether Kovalainen Vilainen might be a chance for that gig, given that he'd done all right in a Super GT, and those things are not a hell of a lot slower than an LMP1 these days.
No.
But
although Le Mans not cut into the side of a mountain, crazy Gran Turismo style track.
No, there are. There is actually straights and things. I don't know if Kovalainen's ever run a Le Mans. A lot of those
open. I think he might have. I think he might have done P2 a couple of years ago.
It's the sort of thing those a certain generation of open wheel Formula guys never would have done until it was too late for them. Until they'd already been kind of washed up. They wouldn't have done it coming through, whereas it seems to be something that open-wheel Formula guys are more inclined to try.
Because you can't get into Formula One anymore.
But there's I think back in the day, there was a thing, if you've tried it, it was almost like a tacit admission that you weren't going to make it, and you didn't want to do that because it would take you off the radar of team principals. But I think that sort of faded a bit.
Yeah. No, there's a lot more cross-pollination between the open-wheel guys and the sports car guys and the GT guys than there was even, 10 years ago.
It's actually a fun era because there's a lot more cross-discipline racing. There's a lot more guys who are... Because there was always this thing that, back in the day, Mario Andretti would drive a sprint car, then he'd drive an Indy car, then he'd drive a NASCAR and a Formula One car on the same weekend kind of bullshit. And it was bullshit, but that kind of flexibility was prized. Jim Clark racing a Lotus Cortina and then his Formula One car at the same meeting. It's not quite up to that, but there is a lot more versatility these days. Dudes doing all kinds of
things. Yeah, well, you get like Nico Hülkenberg, won Le Mans.
Yep.
The other year while he was still racing in Formula One. Yeah. And
then
you imagine
so he could never do it again. Sure they were scheduling
you imagine someone like Michael Schumacher doing that. It would never happen.
It might happen wasn't racing
at the height
for
of his career. Can you imagine Michael Schumacher going, you know what, I might go and do Le Mans.
But the thing is, back in the day, they used to always do that. I mean, Jack Brabham in his 66 World Championship year, he was racing for Matra at Le Mans at the same time. It's kind of, and you look back at all these.
It's going back to that, having spent a lot of time in F1, just sort of, and a lot of the open wheel stuff just sort of being this silo of, well, I'm an open wheel driver, I only want to do that. But now there's more opportunities.
Yeah.
There's more opportunity to make a living driving, going off and doing GT3 or going over to America and doing IMSA or, you know, all this sort of stuff, because there's, I think the drivers are starting to realize that you're probably not going to get into Formula One unless you have a stupendously large checkbook attached.
Red Bull signage all over you.
So,
and even if that case,
all this other stuff is on the up now. So why don't you go and do that, and you can make a name for yourself going and doing GT3 that is very popular, or going over and doing IMSA, which is becoming more popular,
particularly since now their lowest class, the GT Daytona class, is a GT3 class. I mean, that's, GT3 is kind of the thread that unifies a lot of motorsport these days, particularly because GTE/GT Le Mans has kind of converged with GT3, even though the convergence talks didn't really work out. There's still manufacturers who are building cars to those two formula and combining them. Like the last Ferrari was actually built side by side as a GT3 and a GTE car.
The 488 is available as a GTE and a GT3.
And there's a kit. You can just buy a kit and swap it between one to the other.
I think there's an Aston Martin as well that you can do both.
Yeah, I think that probably has happened as well. And, of course, the Bathurst 12-hour winner, thanks to Tugul's Wind Cup deciding not to be intimidated by being thrown off the road. That itself was an interesting little dynamic with going back to that 12-hour. The fact that the entire Red Bull Racing 888 team were basically running that Ferrari. The Maranello Motorsport team was just full of 888 guys. I mean, Roland was in there, Dutton was in there, Coucher was in there. They had Wind Cup and Lowndes. It was basically a 888 run car, and then Shane's over on his own in this AMG Merc. So that was an interesting little dynamic as well, the way that kind of worked itself out.
I wonder if that problem will solve itself moving forward, and we'll see Van Gisbergen and two girls and Lowndes all in a car together.
It's kind of like the supercar
superstars or whatever you want to fucking call it.
I think there's going to be a lot more of that. I think that the fact that they've brought in a pro class means you can do that. I think it would.
You can, and the fact that supercars now promotes that race is going to mean that we're going to see a whole heap.
Yeah, I mean, how many V8 supercar drivers weren't there? They were all there. Many. I mean, there was Chas Mostert turning up in some fucking bin-sponsored BMW that he ran for an hour and then broke. You know, bloody Frosty Winterbottom was there. Everyone, I mean, there was just, they were just fucking everywhere. So,
yeah. The pro thing's really interesting. And I think I said this in the last episode that they've got to be careful, because if the Bathurst 12 hour becomes 40 pro GT3 cars and a couple of pro am GT3 cars, that's going to get really boring really quick.
Well,
it's going to miss.
How sustainable is it? That's kind of the question.
Yeah, well, it's really putting your eggs in the GT3 basket. And to be fair, I don't see GT3 going anywhere in a hurry. That category is just, it's really on the up, and it's been on the up for a couple of years now.
Yeah, but it is getting more expensive, and I think...
So this is the problem.
Yeah, and its lifeblood is the cashed-up gentleman driver who's buying all these Audi R8s and all these Ferrari 488s and shit like that. And when they get priced out the market, then, or if they no longer have an opportunity to win... Admittedly, like who's the dude who ran with Wielander and Lowndes Wind Cup? Is it Peter Edwards?
I can't remember.
The gentleman driver in that I think it was, I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Peter Edwards in that Maranello Motorsport Ferrari. He's writing the checks for the whole enterprise. If he no longer feels like he's got an opportunity to do that sort of stuff, because there is no place for the cashed up AM. And admittedly, tiniest violin imaginable for cashed-up dudes who want to race expensive cars, because I'm never going to be one and neither are you. But they are kind of the economic mechanism that drives the whole bus.
Yeah, and this is part of the fallout from the whole the GT coming together thing that never happened, because the way it was talked about when the GT thing really finally fell apart. Was the GTE was going to be the manufacturer's pro playground, and GT3 was going to be basically the pro-am little brother.
Yeah, but what happened is
it became so much more viable as a manufacturer to build and sell GT3 cars, because you could sell them. That sort of everyone's rushed over to there, and they sort of spent 3 years as the pro-am thing, and maybe you got a pro-pro at something like the Nürburgring 24, where dropout ratings just don't matter. But it slowly, the manufacturers have pushed and pushed and pushed because they want to run their, they want to run and win GT3 races.
In order to sell your customer sports cars. Yeah.
In order to sell more cars, rather than go and do GTE and build another car and go and race that to sell your GT3s.
And the thing about the GTE cars, which is the GT Le Mans in America, is that there's a limited number of places you can race those things and a limited number of people who can buy them. Whereas there are 20 or more GT3 racing series around the world.
Because
and what we're talking about is not Audi wanting to sell base model R8s to people. We're talking about Audi Sport wanting to sell Audi R8 GT3 models. It's the customer sports divisions of these racing teams, of these manufacturers, are what are driving this. And the best way to sell those things is to have a factory team that wins the Spa 24 or the Nürburgring 24 or the Bathurst 12. And that's the other problem. All the highest profile races, apart from the big, well, actually, no, all the highest profile sports car races where a GT sports car is the top class are GT3 races. They're not GTE races. GTE are always a secondary class to a prototype class in all the big races that they run in.
Yeah, so I don't know how that, it kind of surprised me that that's kind of how it's worked out. I'll be very interested to see over the next few years how this continues to go, because GTE is in trouble, really.
And that's a weird thing to say about what appears to be massively successful. It really depends on, I mean, what we're probably looking at is having GT3 as a, it may end up being the factory manufacturer series that they were hoping GTE is, and GT4 becomes the
pro-am playground
punter. But then there's plenty of manufacturers who want to sell GT4 cars as well. And I think
you're looking at the entry list for the WEC prologue thing at Monza in a couple of weeks. There's Ferrari 488, a Ford GT, a Porsche 911, and an Aston Martin Vantage, and that's it. Those are the four or five different cars. And when you look at, which is cool, fine. But when you look at GT3, you've got things like that. You've got the Cadillac, you've got Corvette, you've got Lamborghini, Porsche, Bentley, Ferrari, Audi, and Aston Martin, Bentley, Audi,
yeah.
Nissan.
The Mercedes that won everything. And the BMW won all the things that the Mercedes didn't win.
And those are kind of, they're more the bedroom wall cars. Like you get far more exotica in GT3 than you do in GTE. Like 488's nice, but...
But you can have that in GT3.
You can have that in GT3. Well, the Ford GT's nice, but you'll never see one on the road because they're building about...
an imaginary car. And I don't understand.
Building about 12 of them just to get them homologated to go racing so they could win their class at Le Mans last year.
Which wasn't in any way bogus at all.
No, not at all.
No,
you have a Porsche 911 in there just because you have to have a Porsche. Like, you can't have a GT race and not have a Porsche in there.
No.
Or a Ferrari.
Yes.
You have to, by law. Aston Martin's continuing its voyage of not really knowing what it wants to do.
I think they're building something new for... They're building a DB11-based thing or a Vantage-based thing for this
year. Or is it the Valkyrie?
The
Red Bull Adrian Newey wet dream car,
is that
or whatever
name
it is.
For it? I thought they were going to call it the Viscount. Named it after it. It has to be a V. They were naming quite a few of them after old bombers like the Vulcan. I thought the Viscount would be good. They named it after a brand of caravans. Let's face it, the audience for these cars are people around the age who should be buying caravans, which is kind of the ridiculous part about these hypercars, is that to have enough money to pay for them, you kind of have to be really old. You kind of have
or
to
Or a massive Silicon Valley dude, bro.
Yes, in which case, I hope you have an accident and hurt yourself, because you're probably terrible.
Yeah, I have my theory is that people that can afford to buy nice cars are exactly the sort of people that should never be allowed to buy nice cars.
Well, that's probably fair enough. What else is there? So we've ruined Formula One. We've ruined bad supercars. NASCAR's ruined itself.
Oh, man. I watched the Daytona 500, and what have they done?
They introduced hockey periods. So they sort of split the race into thirds for no reason.
I don't understand. It was weird. They were watching, and then they stopped, and then they started again, and then they stopped. And it wasn't just because...
They have a competition portion, like it's a fucking...
Occupied the same area of track as each other.
Well, to be fair, that race was more Demolition Derby than NASCAR race, which is probably also apparently a new model they've got. But
well, so was the what's the other series? The next one down, the Xfinity.
The Grand National.
I watched that race as well at Daytona, and that was tremendously bad.
It's just turned into a 3-stage demo derby, but they've brought in these. Effectively, like competition cautions to split the race into three parts. Like, I mean, competition cautions belong in stadium super trucks. They've got no business in any kind of sensible sport. But the problem is that all it means is that there's even less reason to tune into a NASCAR race for anything more than the last five laps. Tune in the last five laps. You find out who won the first two segments and got the points, and then you see the ending and you move on to something more interesting. Because what they're trying to do is get people to watch the whole thing. This is going to make people less likely to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, like, I would watch more NASCAR races if they randomly, they just put a big sort of pneumatic-powered pylon in one and just, at random intervals, just a car would just, like, take off. It'd just fire this thing into the ground and the whole car would take off.
I think that's how they staged the accident in Days of Thunder, didn't they? They had some hydraulic ram to fire a tree stump out the bottom of it so it would flip.
I'm going to put him in the well!
You put one of those in every car, and you attach it to the computer that was probably running the start lights at Clipsal.
R.I.P. Clipsal.
And at some point, four or five times during the race, and the times are random, it will fire in one of those cars and flip it into the air. And you don't know when it will happen, you don't know which car it will be, you just have to wait for it. I will watch that.
Yes, because you're a sociopath. So, speaking of Clipsal, it was the last time that Clipsal will sponsor the Adelaide 500, as we alluded to earlier. And I was mumbling about this with Bezo at one point, is the Clipsal, in quotation marks, one of the better bits of name recognition sponsorship in Australian sport? Because everybody knows what the Clipsal is and was. Even people who know nothing about motorsport knew about it because of all the, the Clipsal was a big event.
Is it just a byproduct of them getting in on the ground floor and them being there since... They were there since day one, weren't they? It was always the Clipsal 500.
Well, no, there was a couple of years when it was the Sensational Adelaide 500 or something like that. So
I don't remember that.
But it's been... I think they said it's been 7 years.
It's been there
years.
Long enough. It's like it's like the Caltech's Chase at Mount Panorama.
Yeah,
like,
it's called that even when it's not.
It's just that. Yeah. It's always that.
But it's... I was trying to think of other cases like that, like the Winfield Cup in rugby league. It's kind of became... such a part of the landscape that it just was a thing.
The Benson and Hedges World Series cricket.
Yeah. Exactly right. And the James Hardy 1000 for kids of a certain age, but not a bad effort for a company that makes light switches. I mean, could you?
I only worked this out a couple of years ago. Just what Clipsal actually did.
Well, here's the thing. I did my work experience in high school, so this is a long time ago, but my cousin was the manager of it was literally, I don't want to do work experience, this is bullshit, and at the last minute we queued up that I'd go and work with my cousin who was the manager or assistant manager of an electrical supplies warehouse in Lismore. And that's how because of that week, I know the difference between a HPM and a Clipsal light switch just by looking at it. There's certain things that just stick with you.
Well, that's a life skill that's really going to help you out.
Absolutely. I've used it every day in my life, except for all the ones I didn't, which was all of them. But I knew who Clipsal were because of that.
I knew they were an electrical thing. I just didn't know anything more than that. It's like BOC gases. I knew they did gas. What sort of gas? I don't know.
No, air.
Pertec made hoses. What sort of hoses? I don't know. Yeah. It's a hose.
Not garden hoses. I haven't seen them at Bunnings.
You cut it up, you put it into an Orchie bottle, and you have a good time. That's how it works.
I wonder if NZ have ever been called in to fix up a hose on someone's Orchie bong.
I hope so.
Call out in the middle of the night. How elaborately could you engineer it? Anyway, this is totally off topic. But so this weekend, by the time this goes live, because we'll probably pop this up tomorrow morning, but by then the first round of the IndyCar should be done and dusted, which is on tomorrow morning in St. Petersburg.
Not the one in Russia.
Not the one in Russia, the one in Tampa. But is there a difference anymore? That will be... It's the last year of the hideous aero kit IndyCars, which is good because those things look like a balsa modeler went absolutely mad and just kept sticking shit on shit. But it should be good racing. I mean, the thing about IndyCar is that it is one of the few international racing series that's actually had a tick up in ratings and attendance and stuff like that over the last year or two. Really, it was coming from a long way back, but compared to NASCAR, which is hemorrhaged following.
That's a pretty low bar to say that, oh, we've had an improvement.
Yeah, but I mean, that's but it's better
IndyCar
than
IndyCar spent a lot of time in the wilderness.
Yep, for sure.
After coming off the heights of Champ Car.
Yeah, well,
when that was just kicking them all over the place.
Yeah, well,
that was. Champ Car in the late 90s was excellent.
Oh, yeah. But then Homeboys wanted to have their own series and there weren't enough ovals in it. And then you had the IRL IndyCar War, and then which basically killed the sport. So they've got a long way to come back from. But, I mean, there's positive things. I mean, the next TV deal will probably be really good. They've been looking at trying to trade dollars for a bit of – we talked about this a few weeks on the podcast. But they're not just going to go for the biggest dollar deal. They're going to go for the deal that gives them the best flexibility in terms of getting on network television but retaining rights over digital and stuff like that. Because I think that's really how you grow any sport, particularly motorsport. There's so many motorsport series that you can watch for free on the internet that if you're locked up on some bullshit pay-per-view thing, you're really going to struggle. You're not going to be able to reach a market. So you've got to be able to get access to eyeballs.
Yeah. Well, that's something the American Le Mans series was really, really good at. Okay, you're in America. Okay, well, you've got to watch it on, you know, ESPN or whatever bloody channel it was on. If you're outside America, it's just on the internet and you could watch it. And I remember waking up after a fairly heavy night on the Terps by the Sunday morning and then looked on Twitter and said, oh, there's an American Le Mans series race on at Laguna Seca. I sat there for 6 hours and watched it.
Yeah, I mean, the Sebring I'll probably watch. I have to remember when it starts and when it finishes. But you're going to watch it. Whereas WEC make you pay through the arse for it. And if it's not going to be much fun, if it's going to be a Porsche benefit this year, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I've paid for the WEC thing every year since they started it. And they didn't used to pay for it. It used to be free. Bastard.
Yeah. I usually start at Le Mans.
This is the first year I'm looking at it going, maybe not.
Well, yeah, I normally...
Like, maybe I'll just keep that $50.
Well, I normally start at Le Mans, because what happens is I watch the first two rounds are on in the middle of the night, so I'm never going to watch them anyway, so I just find someone dumped it to YouTube at some point or whatever. I just watch the highlights. But then midway through Le Mans, I normally get sick of watching shitty stolen feeds, and I shell out for the rest of the season ticket, and then I watch the rest of the season on the WEC thing. But unless it's going to be dynamite, I'm not really sure, because the European Le Mans is free, and would you believe one of the minor free to air channels here was showing live European Le Mans. I don't know why. I don't know why they thought this would rate, but they were. So that's a thing.
They're probably looking at it and going, well, it's cheaper than syndicating literally everything else.
It's literally cheaper than the test pattern for 3 o'clock in the morning.
we could at least sell some ads against it.
Yes. We can get some sponsorship from somebody rather to run that shit.
Eves Petrol in Dunedin brings you the European Le Mans series.
All the manufacturers that are in the series can tip in some money. Oh, wait.
Oh.
Gibson.
Orica.
Yes.
Don't they make photocopiers?
Oh, dear.
Alpine.
Well, they're controversial because technically that's part of the Renault Corporation, and they're still going to run a team. I don't know if they're going to call it an Alpine, but it's still they're still out there in theory.
On the WEC entry list, the team is called Signatec Alpine Matmut.
Matmut. I think Matmut. Then Matmut make, aren't they a fucking supermarket or something?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what Signatec is either.
I think that's just the team name.
So. Also, somewhat surprisingly, Jackie Chan is running two cars.
Yeah, Jackie Chan is in with David Chang, and I think they're running... It's either...
The two Orica Gibsons.
I think he's either teamed up with G-Driver, he's teamed up with Jota. But one of the... So there's I think Jota's not running G-Drive anymore. G-Driver has moved across to somebody else, which is the Russian man with all his money. I think Jackie Chan's team is running with...
Yeah, because the drivers are David Chang, Alex Brundle, Tristan Gommendy, Ho-Pin Tung, Ollie Jarvis, and Thomas Laurent. And I think Brundle and Jarvis have been with Jota before.
But Brundle was in United Autosports. I think United Autosports are also stepping up to P2. And that's another team that is running a team up there as well. This is where we need Graham Goodwin and his encyclopedia of bullshit to explain all this sort of stuff.
I'm just looking at entry list going, I don't know who any of these people are.
No, and it's still, and they don't race till Easter, don't they? The first round
is ages away. It's Easter weekend, which is nice because for a race in the middle of the night on a Sunday, it means I don't have to go to work on Monday, so I might actually watch it.
Yep.
And from memory, Spa's on a Saturday, so it means it's on a Sunday morning, so I could watch that one too.
That's true as well. That is true.
And then I take holidays to watch Le Mans because I'm sad.
Oh, well. Yeah, you're in, it's all right. There's a safe space for sad people here. But why wouldn't you watch? I mean, last year was just face-meltingly insane. I mean, it was literally like a bad. So it was like the script to a shitty a racing movie. The thing literally dies on the last lap in front of the pit lane. It's like the opening scene of the action movie where Charles Bronson's bloody family gets shot in front of him. He's like.
It was right up there with the 2011 race, which was the last Peugeot race, where they just went hammer and tong with Audi for the whole thing, like wheel to wheel for 24 hours. It was just bonkers. And I remember sitting there at like 8 o'clock in the morning going, I have not moved.
That's kind of the same.
I've not taken my eyes off the TV. This has just been brilliant from the moment they dropped the flag and this thing started.
It was like the 12-hour this year was actually on, they had it on the website, but you couldn't see it in New Zealand because they had it on Sky Sport. So they had their own pop-up channel to watch it in HD on Sky Sport. And I realised that I had not moved for 6.5 hours in the chair. I must have subconsciously got up and gone to the toilet or something, but I've been sitting in the same chair for 6.5 hours, just going, ah.
I move plenty because in Australia the race was on 7 May.
Oh, right.
And, to describe the coverage as called fucking ordinary.
Well, it's
doing a disservice to Channel coverage. 9 cricket.
It was the same coverage, it's just that there were no commercials. But it still had.
The main coverage was shit. One of my pet hates is, like, if you're going to have ads, that's fine, but. Be at least a little bit intelligent about it. Like, have someone there deciding when the ad breaks on who kind of vaguely understands how a live sports event, particularly a motor race, works, because it's not like full time. You don't get to stop for 30 seconds after a try. Not like football.
Well, given that there were 176...
Or a goal, you know, like, yeah. So when you're coming in and you go, and the commentators are going, hey, look, we're going to expect pit stops in the next, you know, probably at the end of this lap, don't go to a fucking 3-minute ad break.
And the thing was, there were 473 safety car periods. Would that not be a good time to do the ads? The funny thing
that was the other thing that shit me off, is that they come back and just go, oh, well, the safety car's out, we're going to go to an ad break, so we can show you more green flag racing. And then we come back, we get 2 laps of green flag racing, and then we'd go to another 3-minute fucking ad break.
But Channel 7 have always done this. I mean, and you could always tell.
They were shit when they did the supercars. They've fucking ruined this fucking race.
The funny thing is that is always the fake reveal. And you could see this because we were watching the version that didn't have ad breaks, and then like something would happen and they go, oh, and they'd react to it in real time. And then clearly they'd all have to pause, and then there'd be some music coming in and the on-screen graphics could come in, and they'd have to react to it as though it was really happening in real time. When in fact, it had happened a minute and a half ago, and they just had to pretend for the sake of Channel 7.
I am really enjoying the supercars on Fox and getting it ad-free because you can tell the races that Channel 10 are taking live because they do exactly the same thing. The little thing pops up in the corner. Neil Crompton shuts up for 30 seconds.
And we're back!
And then starts up again, and you can always go, it's the Clipsal 500 at Adelaide. It's got no shit, mate. I've been watching this for 2 hours now.
I haven't gone anywhere. I don't know where you went. Actually, Fox, you know, Fox are bad, but they do a pretty good job of the V8 supercars, it has to be said. They do.
The amount of stuff that they show is good. The fact that you can sit there and watch all the right, like, just if you're not doing anything on a Saturday or a Sunday and there's a supercars race, like, you just sit there and you can watch all the support races.
On a Friday.
Or a Thursday.
If you're having a quiet day at work, you can just sort of pop it up in the corner of your screen and watch the Australian GTs go around or something like that. It's unimaginable to you know, I mean, not to show my age, but when I was a kid, they would show the Australian Touring Car Championship delayed very late on a Sunday night after all the AFL had been finished and the Sunday movie. This is, by comparison, is amazing. It's just unimaginably awesome that all this stuff is available, and the same being true of all the stuff that's available in it, all the IMSA and Blancpain and World Rally Cross and Christ knows what else, millions of other series that are just there and available. It's really rather lovely.
It's really good. There's not many weekends where there's not something on you can watch.
No. And that's why our wives and girlfriends are pissed off with us all the time.
All the time.
Anyway, I better let you get back to yours before the wee one starts screaming a hole in the floor and you disappear through it. I mean, your daughter, not your other half.
Hopefully, look at the clock now. Hopefully she's gone to sleep. Maybe.
Nah.
I live in hope. She hasn't.
Nah.
Not a fucking chance.
That's not how they work.
It is not, as I've found out over the last 4 months.
No fucks are given for the way you want the world to work. That's not how any of that's going to happen. But it is a fun adventure. Oh, it will fucking kill you. It is a fun adventure, and it gets you sympathy from people, which is great.
I'm told that it gets better, although I look at my parents and what I was like, and I'm just like, when I'm dead.
No, it doesn't get better.
When I get the final laugh on her and she has to put me in the ground, is that when it gets better?
No, because they would have picked your rest home before then, and they might send you one where there's a lot of Kero baths and stuff. No, it gets different. It doesn't get better. I mean, as they get older, the shits get stinkier, and the there's always...
Just before we started recording, I was informed that we've set a new record for stinky shits.
Oh, good. Are we on solid yet?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, for the last week and a half.
Right.
You see, this is what the I don't know. Is she on solids? It's fucking mush. It's
non-liquids is really what it is.
It's pretty liquid.
It's thick liquids.
Like toothpaste, but, you know, not.
But it will produce a disproportionate amount of solid stinky turd.
Oh, yes.
At the back end. Literally.
She stinks all the time. She is quite capable of rivaling her dad in just dropping truly gnarly farts. just like her dad, she sits there and looks really satisfied with herself after she does
it. Get some of that. Yeah, because you inherit most things from your mother mainly because of the fact that a lot of stuff is maternally imprinted because of the fact that the egg, you know, has more stuff in it than the sperm, has more information in it for programming this sort of stuff. But clearly, you must have passed on some kind of...
Well, I mean, the other good thing is, too, this has given me tougher. I can just blame it on the baby because the baby's now set the bar.
It's like having a dog.
Yeah.
It's just pointing awkwardly at the baby.
This girl was her. You're looking at me fine. I did nothing. I'm totally, utterly innocent in all this.
I think it's quite appropriate that this podcast has literally turned to shit at the end. That's very much on brand for the Bulls podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, Bernie T. Bolt.
Thank you very much for having me back.
Anything of yours that you would like to shout out? You can follow Bernie at Bernie TB.
Follow me on Twitter. If you really want to. Or not. You know, whatever.
Bernie has a real job talking about cars, but I don't know if he wants to mention that on the podcast.
I think I'll just keep that to myself because I like my job and I'd like to keep it.
That's all right. You'll find it eventually.
It's really not hard.
Yes, but probably because you keep retweeting your real account from your fake account, which is not ideal. His opinions about cars are actually employed by the market, which is quite a thing to aspire to.
Other shit car takes are available.
Yes, you may have to pay for them. Please, I'll be back next week. We're not going to have an After Dark this week because we couldn't be asked. But until then, folks, we'll see you later.
And all I can say to that is bullshit.
So, anyway, there goes our new...
The ABC welcomes viewers around the country to one of the highlights of the sporting year. Live from the Adelaide International Raceway, the 32nd running of the Mr. Whippy Grand Prix.
Conditions just warming their tyres. The Messina Green, who was soft serve, ready to promo Mr. Yamina Kankin, chalk top, but of course, Happy Gelati looks to do well in this Grand Prix, did well in practice.
Thanks, man. That was awesome.
That was a lot of fun. I enjoy doing this.
It was a little bit rambling because my brain is custard, but...
I just drove 3 hours back from fucking wherever the fuck I was, down south somewhere.
Jarvis Bay.
Jarvis Bay, and yes, I'm tired and I'm sunburned and I have to go to work in the morning and I really don't want to.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I've actually got the World Superbikes on.
Is that on today, is it?
They're about to start, yeah. About to start their
race. Where are they?
Thailand, at the Buriram International Circuit, which isn't actually a bad, you know, for a Tilkodrome, it's not too bad. It's
Is that the weird one that kind of doubles back on itself and then there's a bit up the top or something?
It looks a bit like a Stormtrooper laser gun. It's got a long barrel and then it kind of comes back on itself. It's dumb. It's dead simple, but it actually races really well.
Is it also about 3 meters wide?
It's quite wide. It is. No.
Oh, it's quite wide.
It's about.
No, like, I'm thinking of there's another one in Indonesia that's about 2.5 meters wide, and I saw a GT race there once, and it's just like, why?
Well, the old ones used to be like that. Yeah, they used to be really narrow stuff. It looked like Cadwell Park. But, you know, narrow tracks are all right for bikes. I mean, some of the ridiculously narrow tracks they race BSB on are fun because it becomes a real mission to figure out places to pass.
I watched a TRS race on some day. It was. I was channel surfing and it just came on. And it was at Christchurch? Raupuna?
Yeah, that would be the first round, yeah.
I've played that track in video games. That was interesting.
There are video games that have Raupuna? Jesus.
Yes. Project Cars has Raupuna in it. For reasons I don't understand. I thought it was made up until I Googled it and found out it was real.
No, it exists. No, sometimes you can see, if you take off from Christchurch Airport, sometimes they fly over it and you go, oh, there it is. I keep meaning to go down to, because they have one round in Christchurch and they have a round at Invercargill at Teretonga, which is about 2 and a bit hours south of from here. And I keep meaning to go down for the TRS for that, just to say, oh, look, I saw, insert random European starlet's name before he got to Formula One because he was racing, because, you know, guys like Lance Stroll was the champion of TRS 2 years ago.
That's right. He's at Williams now, isn't he?
Yes, he's now at Williams. He picked a bad year to be a rookie because apparently these cars are fucking hard to drive. But never mind.
I listened to a half-hour discussion on the drive back up from... Actually, I was listening to Heindorf. I was listening to Midweek Motorsport, and Nick Damon was banging on for about 25 minutes about the new clutches. And that I was kind of like fascinated, Damon. But also I'm sitting there going, it's a 25-minute discussion about clutch paddles.
Yeah, I have to admit, I've started only listening to Midweek Motorsport when it's the week before a big race. You know, like it's the week before Sebring or the week before Daytona or something. Because they're not good on sports they don't cover. Like the Formula One news is pretty bad. It's just a whole bunch of old men.
It's good for me because I could just go, oh, yeah, because I haven't read it either. Because, fuck it, I get to sit there and read 5,000-word missives about fucking testing at Barcelona. Okay. Because I don't care. Just give me the cliff notes and go, oh, they changed the clutch thing. That's going to make it fun.
The thing is that we get on Sky here, we get all the Sky UK Formula One stuff. We probably get that in Australia as well.
I think we get it in Fox too, but again, like 30 minutes of Ted's notebook at the end of testing.
No.
I can barely stomach Ted's notebook at the end of a Grand Prix.
At least that he's wandering around with a whole lot of people just saying, fuck off, Ted, we're done for the day. I just don't keep another 2 weeks.
No, it's like some blokes there trying to disassemble.
Go back to being the dodgy dude running Ted
shoves a microphone in his face, goes, how'd you go on the weekend?
I'm like, fuck off, Ted.
That would be me. If I ever run a Formula One team, I'd just have my little you know how they put up those partitions out the front of the garage, right, after the race is over? That's what mine would just say, is just fuck off, Ted Kravitz.
You were shit when you were running, when you were the dodgy dude running the laptop for Benetton. You're shit now.
You changed your name to Kravitz because you wanted a name that sounded more rock star.
Is that true?
Well, it's on his Wikipedia page.
I don't know, because I know that for a lot of years, Sniff Petrol called him Lumsden Bumhat. And I was wondering if that was because he'd changed his name from something else. Because he doesn't look particularly Kravitz-y.
No, I'm going to...
Mind you, neither does Lenny. I mean, Kravitz, you kind of think of a... Yeah, I don't want to deal in stereotypes here, but...
Ted Kravitz, hold on. Let me just Google up his Wikipedia page.
I mean, it's
yes. Ted Kravitz, born Theodore Joseph Nathaniel Slotover.
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 Isn't that what happens when your Scalectrics jumps?
Yeah.
You end up in literally in the Slotover.
can also happen. It's another personal situation.
it's polite to indicate before changing lanes.
I'm sure there was a thing on his Wikipedia page, aside from the fact that he's...
He changed his name to Kravitz because...
He changed his name to Kravitz.
Because he was Kravitz when he was in Formula... When he was in like a...
It's a lot over in the pits. Ted, what have you got for us?
But because he was known as Ted Kravitz before he worked for Sky, because he was a... He was a peon on RTV. He was a peon engineer for either, he worked for Michael's Ferrari team. He was implicated in some of the dodginess that was going on. Like there was some suggestion that,
on his Wikipedia page.
I remember him being name checked in a discussion about how Ferrari had illegal traction control or something. And it was due to some code that he was up, because he was a laptop jockey with the Michael's Ferrari team, as far as I understand. So that's kind of his background before he got into...
The Kravitz name comes from his mother's side of the family. His parents are Robert and Jill Slotover. I can't get over that name.
Slotover. See, that's even better than Lumsden Bumhat.
It really is. You remember Ian Dicko Dixon, the fuckwit from one of the talent shows?
Australian Idol or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, one of them. His real name's Periwinkle. Which is decidedly less...
Dicko Periwinkle.
Perry Periwinkle.
Wouldn't you have trouble taking him seriously? Prolapsed anus. That's about what you'd expect, actually.
Ian Prolapsed.
Yeah, my name's Dicko. I'm a dick.
Dicko is the guy lining up outside the Rudy Hill RSL at 8:30 in the morning because he really, really needs that first drink.
Yeah, and he wants to get the form guide under for the trots at Dapto.
Dogs at Dapto.
That's right. It's the dogs at Dapto. It's the trots at somewhere else. You should know this because you travelled through Dapto, did you not?
I did travel through Dapto. That was a long time to spend on a train.
Wollongong the brave. Jesus Christ. What were the other places you visited? Unabomber.
Bumbo.
Just go. South Coast.
Shell Harbour Junction, which is neither near Shell Harbour or a junction.
It's like Bondi Junction. What's the junction?
I drove past it today on the way home, only because when I went through it on Friday night, it was dark. I couldn't see anything. I drove past it today. It's in the middle of a paddock.
So it's basically just a highway interchange, yeah?
I don't know. It's a train station in the middle of a paddock.
This is as close as we could be fucked bringing the train station to Shell Harbour. You can walk the rest of the way.
Close enough.
So how did you happen to train down and drive back? Were you just boosting cars in Jarvis Bay or what? Just went around and stole some
Trana? Aaron took baby down on Friday morning.
Oh, okay.
In the car, and then I caught the train down on Friday night after
work. Do you even bother to have a car? Do you have a lot of fleet stuff, or do you?
Well, we get at work. We get press cars. I don't. Yeah.
Oh, right. I was wondering whether
I work in the shitty end of the job.
Yeah, the production.
But
technically, have a car so does Abby. We go out to production.
We both produce.
Yes. Hashtag content.
I actually seriously thought about getting rid of my car when I was living in Petersham by myself as a bachelor because, I didn't need it. If I wanted to go back to my parents, I could catch the train. If I wanted to go anywhere else, I could catch the train, and that's fine.
And also, that situation
has changed somewhat.
Yeah, true enough. And you always need a car when you've got a wee one. It's just nothing.
I don't want to take her on a train. That seems like a really bad idea.
It's also really hard because, if you... So the kid's sick, you need to take it to the doctor. You're not taking your train.
No.
You're just not. It's just how that shit works. Red flag in the World Superbikes. That means someone has dropped their shit in a massive way.
Good.
No, he's all right. He's got up. He looks a bit miserable. Here's a big surprise. Johnny Ray was leading.
I never got into the World Superbikes. Just never. Like, I could stomach a bit of MotoGP, but the Superbikes just... I just can't. I don't know why.
I really... When I started watching him, it was probably the golden era because it had, Troy Corser and Carl Fogarty and Frankie Keeley and all those sorts of dudes. Oh, one of their prelies has dropped its lunch in a huge way, and that's why they've red flagged it. And they also had a pair of absolute nutbag British commentators, and it was actually really entertaining, and races would invariably be decided on the last lap. And it's never been that good since, but it was just it was sort of a...
How good were things in the past?
In the past, things were always better. But it was there was actually really good racing. If you look up sort of late 90s, early aughts, particularly late 90s superbikes, Fox Sports used to do this thing called Last Lap Thrillers. And it was literally
I've watched a couple of those.
With Keith and Julia doing the commentary. Oh, Foggy's got in too deep on the last corner. Yeah, it was relatively apeshit. But and in those days, that was the era where Mick Dillon was just winning every MotoGP race by daylight and change. So it was, you know.
Except for when Alex Creville had him off at Eastern Creek.
Yeah, pretty much.
I remember what. That's about the only highlight from Mick Dillon's career that I can remember was that race where Alex Creville had him off.
I remember when he dropped it at Phillip Island, because I think that was the year either one of the Bathursts was scheduled for exactly the same time. Because in those days there were the two Bathursts, the Super Touring and the V8 Supercar one, what went on to be.
It was only 1 year, wasn't it? Was it 97? A couple of years,
97 and 98. And then by 99, the traditional Bathurst
the supercars.
Was fucked.
Yeah, yeah. The Touring Car Championship died in the arse, and the supercars were the game.
But even then, it took a while for them to get the date back. And in the process, they lost, because traditionally the Bathurst 1000 was on the weekend that the footy grand finals are on now. But they
It was on the long weekend.
It was on like the first Saturday in October, Sunday in October. But when they kind of ceded that space, all the football codes went, oh, we're just going to lengthen our season. It's not like there's anything else there. And ever since then, when they finally got the date back, that's why Bathurst has been that second weekend in October for about the last 20 years, which is a thing.
Yeah, so it's always after the football finals now, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was one. I'm pretty sure there was 1 year when it was on the same.
There was always October. All I remember when I was a kid, that October was a really awesome month because there was Bathurst, there was the IndyCars, and the MotoGP at Phillip Island.
Yep.
Well, like one after the other.
And all on 10.
And they were all on 10.
Because that was back. That was a great era. With,
your home of Motorsport Network 10.
Yeah, Motorsport.
Back when Bill Woods had a face.
Bill Woods had a job. Although I did see
Bill Woods has a job. He's on.
He has a show on like Fox Sports News or something.
Yeah, with fucking Bosnich.
Imagine how wide.
Like 11 o'clock on a Friday night that's when you're going to sit down and watch two old blokes.
Two massive heads. Just two huge heads. How big's the wide angle lens on that fucking thing to get the loaded shot?
I don't know.
It's going to be like a hot air balloon competition.
Watching TV and like an ad for like some shit scotch or whatever it was came on, and I'm looking at the guy doing the ad and go, holy fuck, it's Bill Woods!
Yes. Now available in two strokes.
For years.
Oh, it's sad, man. Jesus.
Oh, God.
It all went downhill when Barry died. Show
a whole heap of motorsport on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Like just random shit. Like, you'd get, like, British touring cars 1 week, and then a champ car race the next week, and then, I don't know, some Australian rally championship, because, sure. And then, like, RPM. And then something else.
Yeah.
It was great. You could sit there all afternoon and just watch assorted car racing.
Yeah. But now that doesn't fly anymore, because all that stuff would have been run and won the week before, and everybody would be like, because TV3 still does that here. They have, like, CRC Motorsport, which is normally whatever happened the week before. Like, they'll have an hour's highlight.
Oh, Speed week.
Yeah. Although, but it's stuff like WRC and WEC and IndyCar and, you know, it's high-profile stuff, but it happened a week ago. Anybody who's...
Because I remember owns
Sky and has already watched.
When Alex Zanardi had his accident in Germany at the Lausitzring, the news from that had obviously filtered through, because that was actually mainstream news.
Yeah,
that this guy had just about died in a car race.
Well, that was
and then Channel 10 did a full replay of the race the next Sunday, so I actually got to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, because that was his best race of the year. He'd been shit all year, and then he'd had a fantastic run, and then he spun coming out the pit lane and did his legs. But that was a big thing for a couple of reasons, because this was like a week or two after 9/11, and they happened to be the largest group of Americans in any one place outside of America. So they were shitting themselves while they were sitting there in Germany, just thinking, we are the biggest target outside America for any terrorist that wants
anyone
to pop. Yeah. So they were, so it was already massively on edge. And
but did they point out that, you know, most of them were Brazilian?
Exactly. Japanese
engineering a cursory glance at the entry list is going Brazilian, Colombian, Brazilian, Japanese. Ah, yes. All those white Christian boys from down south.
Yeah. If it was a NASCAR race, that would have, yeah, there might have been some blowing up of stuff.
Oh, no, if it was a NASCAR race, they would have packed up the whole series and they would have gone into Iraq on day one, on the 12th.
We're going to liberate you here, Cletus!
But we have to come in from Saudi Arabia because we can only turn left.
Just doing circle work in the desert. Imagine if NASCAR ran the US Army. You'd only have to worry.
Just imagine being the CNN correspondent embedded with, like, Darryl Waltrip.
You get fucking dizzy. Boogity boogity, boys, let's go liberate Iraq!
it's a cultural oddity!
So, if NASCAR ran the US Defense Force, you wouldn't have to worry about ever being invaded as long as you just kept them on your left. Because you know which side they're going to come from.
If you get them on the left,
we're going to outsmart them. We're going to put a hairpin.
Go right. But what I've got is I have got the perfect plan to defeat the Americans. It is called a right-hand corner.
Why the German?
I don't know.
Our thoughts, is wide. We lost very, very long time ago. I've just been watching. I've been watching Shane make mistakes all week.
He's just made mistakes all week.
Mara's East German. Mara Engel's actually East German, so his accent's even thicker.
So thick.
Yes, he's like, But the funny thing about that, just go back to that story, was that the head of Mercedes-Benz DTM was in the pit lane with Mara. So he's obviously a big favourite of the head of Mercedes DTM. Mara, last time he was in DTM, was shithouse. So it's going to be really interesting to see. And as it is, Mercedes-Benz, all the DTM teams have cut back from 8 cars to 6. So Mercedes cleared a bunch of their dudes out and then still found a job for Mara Engel. So if he fucks up, he is going to be in a world of hurt.
DTM is just another one of the series that I've watched a couple of races. It's so fucking boring.
Yeah, I watch it because it's free, because it's all on YouTube over here, but also because I know it's important. But it's a little bit like eating vegetables. It's sort of, I know it's important, but I don't enjoy it.
Just tell me who won. Pascal Wellant? Cool. I'll remember him when he pops up again. Oh, he's in Formula One now. Excellent. Cool. Good on him. It's like people that always get upset when, you know, why don't they know who Craig Lowndes is? You know, like, Australians get upset about foreigners not knowing who our guys are. It's just like, well, because no one outside of Australia gives a shit about our parochial touring car series outside of one race a year. And even then, it's only a passing interest.
And it's only when guys like Ben Gisbergen go overseas and go, oh, well, look, these guys are actually of a comparable level that you can see that if they don't. And this is part of the biggest problem with Australia, with how inward BR Supercars are. I think Van Gisbergen did them a massive favour by going out and racing that McLarens and all the other shit that he's done, because he's actually benchmarked the dudes in that series so that they don't look like Muppets. Because as it is, whenever somebody comes over to the V8 Supercars,
the problem is they all went over to the Bathurst. They all went and did the Bathurst 12 hour, and a lot of them came out looking like fucking Muppets.
Well, they look quick, but they usually ended up breaking cars. I mean, all the dudes who were quick were mostly V8 Supercar dudes.
I kind of still feel that, like, there's at the pointy end of supercars, there's a lot of really, like, genuinely good drivers.
Yeah.
But it falls away real quick down to just guys that should not be out there.
Two girls could probably be pretty good in Blancpain or IMSA or something like that. And Winterbottom.
Two girls would be good.
Tim Blanchard, Helmut
would go all right. Like, but then you get people like just like Nick Perkatt and Cam Waters and
Dale Wood. Dale Wood not.
Dale Wood, find the fence. And it's just like, well, but, you know, you're not good.
Well, you can be good on your day, but it's a parity formula. And in any parity formula, there's enough variance. Ironically, a small amount of variance in performance is enough to make a big difference on the day. So you can have a good day just through dumb luck and random chance.
Yeah, like that Tasmania last year when old matey dropped all the liquids from the inside of his engine onto the braking zone at the headpin at Simmons Plains, and the first four cars had absolutely no hope of missing it. So suddenly some random pops up in, you know, has a good day because everyone else fell off the road.
Or it's pissed rain and the whole race is a complete shambles, and for some reason you've managed to pit and get more fuel on board, and it turns out through a technicality that you're going to win the race. Nick Perkins.
I hate that rule. That is such a stupid way to manage compulsory pit stops. It is so dumb.
Well, compulsory pit stops are dumb too. I mean, it's all... I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, but it is so fucking arbitrary and artificial.
Oh, yeah. Like, at least, like, back in the, like, a couple of years ago when it was just like, oh, there's a compulsory pit stop, all you have to do is change two tyres. Doesn't matter which two tyres.
Or there's a compulsory pit stop for fuel because the fuel tank's not big enough. So you're going to have to pit for fuel. The rest of it is up to you. You know, that's... That seems fair enough. And then the rest of it is a black box and you can figure out what your strategy is. Not, oh, you definitely have to... You have to put 140 litres in, but you've only got 110 litres and you've got to do lift through.
And then, and then you end up with this problem is like last year, the world's most obvious thing happened is it rained while the cars were on the grid and everyone went, I don't know what to do. The guys in race control are sitting there going, I don't know. There's nothing in the rules about this.
No, yeah, we don't have a waterproof rule book.
We didn't think up an aborted start procedure, which also might have been useful this year when the lights fucked up at the start of that Super 2 race.
Did you see that? Yeah, I did. I saw what a mess they made of. I had the sound off, so I saw the crash, and then they cut to Tim Edwards whinging, and I knew instinctively that something bad had happened to ProDrive, because whenever Tim Edwards turns up with that kind of cat's ass
it was full like. Oh,
full Edwards.
As soon as they cut to him, I'm just like, oh, this is going to be good. Because I was only like half watching it.
And so it's a Super 2 race. Because it's a Super 2 race.
Like, I was just sitting there and I had my face on my phone and then I heard it all, the commentators blow up. And then I was watching the replays. I went, holy shit. Like, no wonder it all went south. I've never seen that, like, a failure like that before.
Yeah, but I mean, but everyone else managed to get through without clipping somebody and tipping it off into the wall head on. So.
But I mean, the other side of that for me is why didn't it have a failure mode?
You did have a failure mode. You just saw it. It failed. It completely failed.
But, like, why?
Could not have failed any more failure.
Why wasn't there a bit where the computer went, hang on, not right, abort?
Mm. And like, then the dude from the stadium super trucks just holds out a flag and goes, I've got no problem with that as a starting mechanism. Just the old mate holds out a flag and drops it.
More of that, please.
Yes.
Back to the old days. Guys trying to get themselves run over waving the checkered flag. That's what I want to see.
I'm going to Glenn Dix in his coat coming out and fencing with the car with his.
The only race they do now is Le Mans.
Yeah, and even then they all just sort of tiptoe out and sort of drag
because
it.
the last lap's essentially a parade at that point.
Yeah. And
except for this year.
Unless you're in a Toyota, in which case it's a parade on the back of a flatbed.
In which case the belt lap is your parade lap as you slowly grind to a halt.
It's more of a funeral parade. It's a wake.
But this is my problem with supercars, is these obvious things happen, and they don't seem to handle it very well at all. So
yeah,
like,
and it's odd because the race director has been doing it for a million years.
When the track broke up at Bathurst and they had to red flag the race to repair it a couple of years ago, no one knew the rules. Like, you red flagged a race. This, in any other series, in fucking CAM's New South Wales Formula 3, there's a line in the rule book about that. Like, this stuff isn't hard.
Well, clearly it is.
And you look at it now, and then you get last year when it rained on the grid. Like, you just abort the start, do another formation lap, change your tyres, go racing. Really simple. Instead, Formula One
can't do that shit. I mean, the shambles that is any wet weather start in Formula One now. It's almost like it's automatically got to be under the safety car thing.
They're changing the rules for that.
Now they're
going to
have
year.
Standing starts.
Yeah, they're going to do a few laps around behind the safety car to clear the water and then do a standing start. Which is going to be fun the first time it rains.
That sounds like really a perfect Formula
One. Because it's going to be at Spa.
it's your perfect Formula One 2016 solution. It's like, let's come up with a bad solution to a problem that will probably make things worse.
Let's deeply rip something for no purpose and know full well that it's not going to work.
But that was the best idea. You know, it was the line about a camel is a horse that's been designed by a committee. That's exactly what we've got. We've got a whole lot of camels, horses designed by committee.
Anyway, I'm going to go and have another beer.
All right. Enjoy yourself. Catch you later.
I'm just really... stunned for words. I can't believe the reception. I thought Australian race fans had a lot more to go than this. This is bloody disgraceful. I'll keep racing, but I tell you what, this is going to remain with me for a long time. You're a pack of arseholes.